Coming up in about a minute is Hacking Windows Via the Registry by Mojo in this newbie track area. And official start for a minute, so wait for people to get in here. And thank you for finding this room. It took me long enough. Okay. This is Mojo. I don't know if you've known him before, but really cool guy. He has a little bit too much caffeine and a little bit drunk, so he should be a good talk. And for next hour, Mojo.
Okay, I got a stand or something?
Oh, I got one. No, there's one there, not really here.
Okay, I'm going to start out by showing you different vulnerabilities in Microsoft's Windows. I'm going to break the thing down into a couple of different sections here. I'll be open for questions at the end of it because I'm going to be drunk and rambling all the way through and I'll lose my place. It started out with Microsoft. The first thing you got to know is if those of you who have used RegEdit have known that Windows stores, Windows 95 and 98 stores most of its vital information, everything from program settings to all kinds of, to the encrypted passwords on the shares, on the shared folders and shared resources you access across the network, and on little neat little keys like admin dollar sign. Any key you see in the registry with a dollar sign after it, I'll get to where those are located, means that it's hidden from normal view unless you scan. Now, the first thing you want to do is you find your remote system. There is a lot of different available tools to scan it. To scan for Windows shares. There's many NetBIOS and NetBUI cookbook tools that'll give you the shares and their names. Now, one problem a lot of these have, or had until recently, was that you'd scan the share. I believe one of the programs was called WinTrasher, and you couldn't get through because you'd see a little line of garbage because it would give you a reg value, or two little lines of garbage. Now, these little lines of garbage were actually stored with a very weak encryption. What it did was store the passwords for everything from admin resources, which is remote registry administration. Sounds really fun. It gives it to Microsoft in a very uncomfortable place. To the passwords on the share, which gives you read-write access to the hard drive. Now, 3 days after last DEF CON, I broke the encryption on these shares. By sitting there, it, what it required was nothing more than RegEdit, a bottle of Jack Daniels, and a spiral notebook and a pen. Microsoft lends it and gives you all the tools you need to hack it. This, due to an unfortunate circumstance, I don't have the file on me right now. It will be available Monday, which is the master key list for this, which will show you that it's the lookup table on the shares. Basically, you have that little string of garbage. It's what allows you to decrypt it. We'll go more into that later. Because what you'll do is you'll scan the remote machine. You'll see the share name, you know, foobar, whatever share. Then you'll see usually a value. Let's say you're using BO, for instance. How it has that neat little function, query reg value. Now, these keys I'm speaking at are stored in HKey, local machine, software, current version, software, Microsoft, Windows, current version. All these have a slash between them. Yeah. Network, LANMAN, and there'll be a list of the keys and the remote resources you can use. This is 95 and 98. Now, each one of these keys, regardless if it's passworded or not, it'll have an interesting little D word value above it. And you look down and see two keys that really stand out, two values in these keys. They are PARM or PARAM 1 ENC, which is encrypt. PARAM 1 encrypt and PARAM 2 encrypt, which will be followed by garbage strings of just, it won't be any control characters, it'll be just numbers and letters. No more than 16. You will see them in pairs of two. The way the passwords are set up, let's say, for instance, for each single letter or number in the password, or even, you know, shift character and space, there will be two digits or a number and a letter for each one. Now, the number and the letter depends on the place in the password. For instance, let's say your password was cat. You would look on the lookup table. You'll see, when you get the garbage stream back, let's see, you'll see like 0B07A4. Now, C in the first place would be your 0B. If it's in the second place, it would be another value. If it's in the third place, it would be another value. Each one of the characters, it's a place-sensitive encryption scheme. So all it really took to break it was sitting there and setting the passwords A on the share and listing it up all the way down to the eighth place, because it tourniquets it after the eighth. It tourniquets the password after the eighth character, which is not something Microsoft likes to advertise. Yeah, where do you want to go today? But now, then you'd look at this. So you'd look up and you'd see on the lookup table it'll have each character right down into including space and that little freaking wavy thing that you can never figure out. I think it's called a tilde. Tilde. Now, on my lookup table, it will say A as first, and then that value is first. A as second, and that value is second. Is this getting clear so far? And I have the entire thing. Now, I put this in Word 97 format to support another fine Microsoft product. So when you grab this lookup table, what you'll have is you go to the very top, you get your garbage share from scanning, you know, your garbage share. By the way, param 1 encrypt, I believe, is it's the read-only password. Param 2 is a full-only, is a full password, a full access. Don't set these to XOR. You know, you can remove the already encrypted scheme, I mean the already garbage string, and set it to zero. But sometimes Windows has kind of like a retarded thing. Some programs don't respond well to that when you have nothing there, even though nothing is a default password on the share, and the admin's going to notice. Something really more amusing would be to send a packet, or I'll get into ways of sending and receiving things from the registry in a bit, is you look up on your table and do it backwards and add a neat new password there, which is your own. Now, under these keys, there are certain keys you want to flag. Drive keys. And by the way, in your key setup, remember I say in the anatomy of these shared keys, you'll see like a D-word value. You'll see the path, because all these share is like a symbolic link, a shortcut. You'll see a path to what it actually is. You'll see the name for the share, and then you'll have your param 1, param 2 encrypt stuff. Now, what you want to do is your red flag targets. First, anything with a dollar sign on it, because those won't appear across the LAN when you're looking in the visual interface, but when you do something cute like I call it NetBui Ninjutsu, when you do a netstat or an NBT stat, and it gives you the complete listing, and you see something with a dollar sign in front of it, this is what I call a red flag key. This means that this key is one of your prime targets. Admin dollar sign is your prime target. Those of you who've played around with the control panel settings have seen, you know, where it says change Windows password? Admin is that change Windows password. Now, I'll get into the way to enable remote administration. That's a different technique. But I'm going to stick to shares for the first part of this. Now, brain fart. Hold on. With the shares, there's lots of cute things to do. If you get shared drives, you can read and write straight to their root. I'll get into different ways to enter things. Now, let's see. Any further information on how to crack the shares? I'll give at the end. And we have a special surprise for the Microsoft guys. The first, when I gave them this information a year ago, and they couldn't comprehend it or its usefulness, because it was just 95-98, you know, if you want security, get NT, supposedly, you know. Now, they said, no, what is the use of this? Several people said, what's the use of this, and they couldn't understand it, because I, you know, had problems laying it out for them. Now, this year's surprise attack for the Microsoft guys, I found the way to make it apply to NT. What you do, I was looking through NT and playing around, and I noticed there's a blank LANMAN key under a similar path to the original network one that I explained. Now, all you have to do is do what I call toggling, you know, enable LANMAN, which is just finding using a reg search through your own registry. That's what's beautiful about Windows. You can find the insecurities on your own and toggle the values, then export the key over that way. I'll get into that in a second. Now, what you do is you turn on the LANMAN support. Sometimes you won't even have to because they need it to interface with all those cute little 98 boxes in your office. You pick the name of the folder you want to have access to as a share. Let's say it's Drive C, for instance. You then build your own key based on the 98 one, add your own password by doing a reverse lookup on that table, and it export it into the NT registry under the LANMAN key. So NT usually goes through the SAMs to authenticate it. This lets it go through the nice and secure LANMAN way and makes your own share. How to reverse engineer it. Love you guys. Now, before I go back to that, I'm going to go into different techniques of picking apart the reg and writing your own and different hacking. The first I'm going to teach you is what's called locksmithing. I do it because you make your own keys to open cute things that you're not supposed to unlock. What you do is you go through your system and you look at different key values. You look at things like, for instance, your shares, everything from, you know, passwords you enable in the system to, I'll get into it in a second, all the registration information from a program that you don't want to pay for, hypothetically, to quote Ghost. And what you do is you think, okay, the remote machine has this software enabled. The remote machine has, you know, I want a value to change in the remote machine. Let's say I want to turn the remote machine's remote administration value from 0 to 1. You might have to upload a couple of files, too, but you can put them in the right place, and there's lots of slippery ways to copy past permissions that you'll get into in later NT hacking sessions. So what you do with your key is you go into your own registry. After installing, you know, the services of theirs you want to hack, you look at it for a second and say, believe it or not, things like on and off or in the policies. In policies, it'll be a hex value. You can use PolEdit for that. But to turn PolEdit on, all it is a 0 value to a 1. Can you guess which is off and on? So what you do is you turn it on in your system. You know, minimize regedit, turn it on in your system, close regedit, restart, go back to that same key, highlight the key and select export registry key. You now have your own Microsoft-made patch to that remote system. This is what I call locksmithing. By altering the values on your own system, like I said, we'll get into how you're going to get this onto theirs. But by changing the values on your own system, you're making the keys you want to toggle simple values so you can get into the more advanced reg stuff. This is locksmithing. It's the term phrase I coined. Regmoning. Oops, too loud. Regmoning. There's a program called Regmon, which it's a Windows NT 95 reg monitor. This is one of your biggest tools for registry hacking. Everything for what you want to do is turn it on and start going around changing passwords, play with your policies, and, well, first of all, anything under HKDYN data, ignore. That's usually where the hardware stuff is stored. What you're going to look for is HKey local machine, HKey current user, which are the areas where configuration data is stored. So what you do is you see, hey, what changed? When you pull up your regmon list, you go, hey, what changed? Okay, where's that cute little key? What value changed? Then you go through and find what you want to change. You can selectively pick just about anything that you want to alter, from, like I said, registration information to a program to security on your remote PC. You know, it's just a matter of getting it across. Doesn't BackOffice's odd add reg key feature make a lot more sense now? I mean, it has a lot more uses once you can do it manually. Toggling, I just went through. You know, screensaver can be 0 to 1. Any, you know, it's just the screensaver enabled, disabled. You've all changed that, which isn't that hard to get past. Those of us have pulled the cute practical joke of putting a password-protected screensaver in a coworker startup menu with a one-minute delay. Know that there's sometimes that's the loop. The way to get past that is just change the reg value from 0 to 1. That's Windows 98. In Windows 98, 95. NT has a couple of different things. The only similarities in NT, which I'll give them their props, is secure from these attacks with the exception of adding the key. They were nice enough to make the do regis compatible. By the way, let's go to, moving kind of fast here, cached program passwords. Sniffing. Okay, I call this the ping pong attack. Now, under HKey local machine, software, and then you pick, let's say for instance, a save Netscape mail password. Locksmithing works backwards too. If you can get that person's registry, getting copies of the user dat, system dat, rebuild it on your own, and scan through the registry on like a dummy box. Now, a lot of those programs like that or Eudora, there's lots of neat encryption crackers written in C that you can barely get to work on a Win machine. And you have that hash you can't undo. I call this my Windows ping pong foo. What you do is you enter their configuration data, let's say from Netscape, export their configuration data, and it's got their saved mail passwords, because you all know you can set up multiple profiles. Export it onto your machine. You're probably going to need another machine for this. You set up your second machine. Okay. Well, once you've exported this in your machine, you just go to Netscape, change to that user, and they've got that making sure that you have saved password value set from 0 to 1. So when you start the program, it doesn't dump it automatically. It has that saved password. Now, a lot of these won't show it starred, but they'll still send it on the first try. If they show it starred, you use a program called Revelation or one of the pass thief things. Now, what you do if it's not starred, but it's still going to remember it and send it across. Those of you who will get into the advanced thing of using a sniffer, here's how it works. You've got Mr. Netscape with your saved mail password you can't touch. You set up another machine with a really, really cheap mail client that only that does two things. You set up, you know, your users on that little mail server and everything on their machine. You can get standalone programs like this. Now it's got a password and authentication. You set the user, and make sure the username on the remote machine is the same username as the one for your Netscape saved profile. Then make sure the password is just something really odd and obscure. Now mail it. Now try to get it to connect to that server to send or receive mail to your dummy server. Make sure to have something like Net X-Ray or a sniffer running. You just sniff the passwords, it'll send it clear text. This is the ping pong attack. Because what it does is, you know, even if it's encrypted, by the time the other machine looks at it, if it's encrypted, the other machine will look at it, and the attempted password will be saved in the log file from your dummy mail. If it's sent clear text, you can just sniff the packets, look through, you'll see username, bunch of garbage, sure enough, there'd be your password. This is ping-ponging, as I call it. You didn't see that. Okay, I'm going to move along quickly to RNA crackers and Revelation. One beautiful thing is that a lot of people have written programs that sniff through the registry or, you know, play cute little things with API calls to grab your Windows passwords or decode them or hash them. These cookbook tools can be, there's a whole bunch of them, and they can save you a lot of trouble in regmoning. Always check there first when you're doing your research. So you go to like Genocide 2600, Tattoo Man, I believe it is, where they've got the big stored thing. Oh, previous note, I'm kind of jumping about here. If if your scan target is behind a proxy and you can't get a hold of the stuff, sometimes an NBT stat will work. Otherwise, you go to BugTrack and find the exploit to that Windows proxy. We all know how secure Win98 proxies are. Okay, I'm going to get into INFing now. This is another phrase I've coined. INFing is real simple. How many of you have put in, I'm sure all of you have put in a Windows CD and had it auto-run. There's a little file called auto-run-inf. It'll have something like open, icon equals, and then the program it wants to run. Sometime if it's an installer, it'll have a neat little thing in brackets that says regedit and for, or something along those lines. And then registry values that just automatically get entered with the auto-run. A lot of installers have this. You know, or you'll see it says call regedit. All you have to do with those neat little reg keys to paste them into an INF, export them to your desktop, open them with Notepad, cut and paste that into an auto-run INF. This will enter your registry values, so you get your nice, cute saved keys, burn them off onto a CD. This is an amusing console bit. what you do is you walk up to that big NT box and you know, that's sitting in the middle of the place, pop the CD in, kind of stand in front of it, look around, look kind of innocent, let it auto-run, pop it out. You've now just completely foobarred, you know, their methods of security. Now, the regedit, I believe it's an ANFOR symbol. You'll see it when you open the key and start dissecting reg keys with Notepad. When you export a reg key to the desktop, all you have to do is double-click it, and we all know it's entered immediately. If you want to set up your INFs, like I said, you just enter the reg, cut and paste it, and enter it under everything after the open icon. Don't run any .exe because that's going to be kind of obvious if you've got like a cute little smiley face or something taking up the screen. It should be in and out. Now, here's something that I got off Windows95.com that led to the other form of INFing. Now, Windows95.com had a cute way to add icons to your individual drives, ID, C, D, E, that weren't hard and that weren't CDs. You wrote an auto-run INF with an open icon and then open the program. Every time they clicked on that drive, it entered. And, you know, it ran your little auto-run. And when you hit F5 in your cute little My Computer, it had individual icons for each drive. That was interesting enough to me. I figured, why not put the regedit information? All you have to do is get it to the root of any of those drives. When they double-click the icon, the values will be toggled, which is another fun way of playing with Windows. Second to gather my thoughts here. Now, I didn't go back to this. Now, I don't condone Where's Kitties by any means. But I find it deeply amusing when you've got a program, something that we all know that is used for secure shelling, for instance, that a lot of us can't afford. This is just an example. I don't condone cracking things like this. I don't condone illegal software or where it's distributing. But you might find it funny how such a program that stores lots and lots of encrypted things and uses three different encryption algorithms, like many other programs, stores its registration information, like who paid for it and what, and guess where? The registry under its software key, under HKEY local machine. So you'd find a buddy with software that's, when it installs, of course, running regmon when it installs. If you don't see it make a reg entry, it's probably using an INI file. So what you do is you HKEY local machine, software, the company name of whatever it is, export the whole key onto a diskette. You know, from a buddy's who's got a registered version, you would maybe, think about exporting the whole key from a diskette, putting it on your as a reg key, putting it on your desktop, double-clicking it. Now the information is saved. And after installing the said program and running it once, just to make sure. This makes it not really safe for anybody writing shareware for Windows to store things in the registry. The registry is supposed to be a spinal cord and a brain. There are a lot of hackers who say you shouldn't go through Windows. It's much like mugging the retarded. However, much like mugging the retarded, it can be fun, amusing, and profitable. Now, a lot of this is just a matter of switching values. Windows gives us a beautiful GUI to play with, and everybody looks down on it for hacking with it because you have, people say you can't get into the low-level commands. Well, you can. That's what the registry is for. And if we're going to move forward, we're going to eventually have to move from typing 16 different command lines to toggle one save value and writing different INI files or different, stored conf files in Unix to being able to toggle them with a click of a button. The biggest exploit generator there is, I'm sure you've all heard of the cookbook tools. The biggest exploit generator there is regedit, because it allows you to export the keys and play with them. Now, you can do this without danger by first making sure to always export the key out, the original values. Let's say you've got, for instance, you want to crack something that's encrypted and stored, right? Or a long serial number on an algorithm. What you, for instance, how many of you have ever forgotten when on a job, have ever had to reinstall Windows 95 and forgotten your serial number and scream because nobody keeps the little book? Now, those of you who don't have net access because the box isn't up, you can probably get, what you want to do is you look at another Winbox. Just export, you know, you can look under the reg, look for serial number. You'll find it. But let's say, for instance, that's the easiest way to find it, but let's say you want to crack a long value that changes. What you would do is first export your key. Let's say we've all seen how most Windows software that's got a copy protector on it has some kind of weird algorithm that generates, you know, a 10-number sequence based on a mathematical equation. Well, this could be really simple. Export your key, pick one number or one letter somewhere in that. Now, it's going to be a maximum of, like, 10 numbers through letters. You know, it's not going to be a character. I mean, 10 numbers, your alphabet. You know, it's not going to be a character. Maybe it's going to be space. Export the key. Now, make a new key, changing that value from, let's say, your number is like something like 20D10. You take the 1 in 20D10 and turn it to a 2. Close down. Make sure to refresh the reg. You don't have to shut it down. You can just close it down. Sometimes hitting Shift F5 will refresh the reg and newer versions of the OS. And you start your program, find, well, 20D2 doesn't work. This also works when you need a separate license on things that have, you know, license numbers generated. All you have to do is go through the sequence of numbers and letters until that value eventually clicks by changing the reg keys. And if it doesn't, you know, usually go for the end, too, because the end is usually where the last four digits is usually where it gets kind of funny and they change things. All you have to do is go through the reg, making new keys and changing that value until you'll crack it. And it's a lot less than the 10 billion combination, because you're only circling through one place in the password. Because all you have to get is one character to change it and give you a registered license. Let's see here. Oh, by the way, we've all heard about log files when you're on a Unix system. I'm going to go right now into some of the comparisons between Unix systems and Windows systems, because believe it or not, they have a lot in common when you get down to the reg level. For instance, Unix system has a configuration file. Let's say turn on the logging daemon. Well, so does Windows. Create netlog.txt, which is, and Windows is a lot nicer and stores it all in the root directory. Create netlog.txt or add to it. Change it from a 0 to a 1. If you don't want your IP traced, make sure to delete that. How many people on their local 9598 box even bother looking through their root directory? Because, well, autoexec.bat and config.sys are supposedly obsolete now. Windows also adds, I'm going to go into more features of Windows here. Windows has something that Unix doesn't, however. Windows 98 has a new hidden feature. It's like msconfig. Now, there's one really wonderful section to this called boot and startup. I'm sure all of you have installed some pesky program, and no matter how many times you delete it out of your startup program file, when it opens, it's still there. What the hell is this? Now, your msconfig looks at, and your msconfig has one section that says boot and startup, and there'll be a bunch of little boxes with everything that starts at boot. Just uncheck the one you need. Why would this be useful for you? Well, let's say you want to run a Trojan. First thing you do is put it in a startup. Select Run Minimize, making sure first to hex edit the program's name out of it, because Windows keeps a nice Control-Alt-Delete list. No problem to find the program's handle name if you search through the hex editor. This is good for laying Trojans. You now, like I said, select Run Minimize in the startup. Then go ahead and check it on boot and check hide. When you start it up, you will have something, an invisible process that's only visible through the nice false name you give it with a hex editor. Because Windows, when it runs the program, 9 out of 10 programs, it'll look for the exe name. A lot of VB things do this. All you have to do is search for the exe name a lot of the time and change app name. This will give you an opportunity to run really, really smooth Trojans through a system. I'm going to go further into Windows Fun and Games, and then I'll start answering questions about red stuff. Some of the other amusing things you can do with a Windows system. I said, the best way to do it is make Windows work for you. You don't need that many external tools. Go ahead and make sure you research it, learn your netstat and your NBT stat, and all your cute little scanning tools, because you're going to need those. All the cookbook exploits are made from you, are made for you. But let's say, for instance, you want to lock somebody out of a folder or hide those shares and make those shares a little more secure. Well, the best way to secure Winbox is turn it off. The second way to do this is there is an old DOS bug, which makes it highly amusing. How many of you are familiar with control and alt characters? Anybody? You drop to DOS, change to your desktop directory, whatever it may be. Make a directory that's going to have your sensitive material in it. Sorry. Hold down your alt key. And when you make dir, once again, this tip's gotten from Win95 for just cutes and funs and giggles. Hold down your alt key. Hit 0255. Let go. It'll make a space. Now, then you type in the name of the folder. Hit enter. Use the command prompt to put all your stuff in there. Now, go ahead and go on your desktop and try opening that. Folder does not exist, because Windows uses a different character set than the old DOS control characters. It'll say folder doesn't exist. Write yourself a simple DOS batch file to lock and unlock that by renaming. And that should save you a lot of problems. Or you can script it even. I'm going to do any brief questions about the registry stuff. Yeah. I believe it was 3. I thought it was Alt 0255. No, excuse me. That was Windows. Alt 255. No. Does anybody have to be logged in? Yeah. So a lot of them, even if they've got a lockout on it, a lot of the time you need to have that tinkered with. If you're going to do it local. Yeah, somebody's going to have to be logged in because it's either auto-run, which most smart admins will turn off. The other thing you want to do is, like I said, however, if it's like one of the Cs, once again, somebody has to be there because they got to double-click it. But it's a lot nicer and easier than a really complicated Trojan that loads at boot time that somebody's going to find with your latest virus checker. No, not if they have their security set up decently. On a 95 box, yeah, it'll work. On a 98 box, yeah, it'll work. On an NT box, I don't think so. No way. The login process is very complicated. Now, I'm going to add, by the way, quick hint to add some security. You know, everybody knows there's bugs that causes your local admin to have to reboot the machine. Very simple thing. Add to your auto exec bat a pause statement. And watch somebody go silly buggers on a remote machine trying to figure out, okay, it's rebooted, why isn't it just logging in? Well, yours will say, strike any key when ready. It's an extra security feature. Other ways you want to do it is hide. There's all kinds of tools like Tweak UI that let you change your default folders. This protects you from lots of Windows Trojans that like to kind of wipe those things out. And your snooping regedit type, who's using, let's say, BO to query the keys, because it's going to be under different folders a lot of the time. The resources are going to be in a different place. Try not to install things to their default directory. Because a lot of people, this isn't going to protect against all, but a lot of people have cookbook tools. Like I said before, pre-made scripts and sets of command that makes them think, wow, I'm a cool hacksaw. And they have no way to alter what that looks for in a path. More questions? This master key list will be available Monday, because we had a slight data mishap, on www.shadowco.org. There will be a copy on dist.org, and there will be a few other mirrors. The master key, like I said, will be in 97 format. If anybody feels interested enough to try to transfer it to another text format, be my guest, but it's a real bitch and a half. www.shadowco.org and www.dis.org, which is the DOC. Also, on the Shadowco site, there will be vicious propaganda. We'll probably keep another mirror there just for shits and giggles. Mm-hmm. Okay, when I said grab the table for the pass, oh, how I actually cracked it when I said grab the table. Okay, the way this was cracked when I made the master key, that is the table. I use it as lookout table CC. Okay, like I said, it's real simple. If you want to make one yourself, easiest way to do it. It's just a pain in the ass and a lot of typing. Make yourself a share on your local machine. Make sure you got file, print, and sharing enabled, even if it's not net connected. Now, go ahead and set the password read-only. Set it to all A's all the way out to 8. Save yourself a little time. All B's all the way out to 8. Open up a text file. Type A. Put in the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They will be sequential. By the way, that hash string with those two characters for each one will be sequential, and they will have a little space between them. You'll have 2, space 2, space 2, space 2. So let's say the first letter is C. It'll be like 07. That's not the correct one because I don't have the key in my head. Next one, C-A-T, 07, like 0B-A-4 would be it. By the way, MS is a little tricky. That's what you do. But you just go through the whole alphabet and every character on the keyboard after renaming the shares and restarting the reg each time and type out your list that way, the long way. Now, Microsoft is a little tricky. When you find the lookup table, you will notice, let's say, for instance, that when you're going to have to do a search, you know, for each place, make sure you have it for the right place in the password. Let's say C could be 04, right? C is first could be 04. Z is third, could also be 04. That's why you list them by a character. Does that make sense? Any more?
What was your special main MT?
Okay. This will work on a BO, and there's many other ways to get your reg across. A lot on which I'm not going to go into because you have tools that are already made to do this sort of thing. Take your same shared, you know, your same share folder with this password, a password you know on it, and look at its key. You're going and look at the key on your machine. Rename. Figure out what the name of the folder or drive is you want on the other one. Change the name on yours to that name. Export the key into the NT registry. It's like giving it an immunosystem weakness. Because NT is a very tight password encryption system. Love cracked. But oh, okay. Okay. Could you repeat that? Mm-hmm. So they can't see it? okay, unless they're console, they're not going to see this because they're doing this from a text interface. If you want to go ahead and play with your system icons, there's hundreds of programs that'll let you change that little hand. One of the best things you want to do if you want to make sure, get a little extra added amusing security to your local console, make a pixel that's transparent front, transparent back, make an icon that's maybe one pixel, assign that, and set the background of that same one. Obscurity is the best way to do it, because Windows lacks a lot of tight security. Windows 95 and 98 does. Make sure to customize the hell out of it. Like I was saying earlier, don't install your default Windows directory. Because a lot of the people who write those, you know, cute little kid Trojans like Format C Windows, I mean not Format Format C, which you can format in real quick, or Delete C Windows. Now, when you install Windows, if you're putting it in like C, you know, Hero or something, you know, give it a different name. Make sure to restructure the way your folders are set up so you will be immune from a lot of the cookbook tools. Fun and game. Oh. Regmon, yeah. Yeah, Regmon is a program that what it does is, it's kind of like a debugger. It lists what's going on exactly. Everything that's being entered and changed in the registry, everything that's being read from the registry. Oh. Everything that's being changed, read or change, you know, read, values read, which will say like query, values change, which will say change key value or enter key value. It'll all be listed in a great big list. It's just a matter of looking, making sure to look for the ones that have, let's say, the name of the software manufacturer you're looking for. Oh, you mean like somebody who would hypothetically hack their local computer store? Those are real simple. Okay, there's some kind of shield program. Anybody want to talk about the little red shield on it that you see on 98% of those? Yeah, that little red shield. Well, what you can do is PWL files like different users. Go ahead and use like Notepad. Sorry. Wrong hack. PWL files. Rename the star PWL files star.fuk. Hit Control-Alt-Delete. This will reboot the system, and it'll still have the default user password in there. Now, add a new password, because the old one, it won't be able to find the PWL file. Add a new user. Then guess what you have access to? RegEdit. From there, it's just kind of downhill. Now, password-protected programs for Windows, like the screensavers, like a lot of the user stuff. By the way, does everybody know that the easiest way to get past on a Windows 95, 98 box? I'm sure everybody here has done it. It's got your username in it and a blank password you're supposed to enter it. It's hit cancel, right? The only problem is this doesn't give you your default saved passwords for like your dial-up networking. It doesn't give you the same desktop. Just go ahead and look in your Windows 98 Windows directory under Profiles. You will then have all the storage settings of the other user and proceed to do the rename the PWL files bit. There are programs available that will also brute force the PWL, but that's kind of pointless. Like if RegEdit's been disabled on the remote machine. Okay, the remote admin. That's what I was missing. If the machine doesn't have the remote services enabled, what you need to do is add a key there so it looks for it. let's say you're using BO, for instance, this is the easiest. There's lots of the programs that allow you to do changes like this. So the cookbook tools that allow you to do make minor tweaks to the system, remote or otherwise. Add an admin $ key. Then remember what I said before about smithing? Just recreate the same key there. There you go. You've now created an admin on the remote system. No, you make it on the remote system under Landman directly. It'll be the first one always to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what. Thank you. On your laptop? Yeah, I've run into this before, and you're pooched. Yeah, I guess you could use an external keypad, but that seems like a lot of trouble to get at something you should have just put on floppy. Huh? Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to go into the not-so-nice things you could do to Windows. These are destructive things to do via the registry. For those of you who for some reason feel that MS is an inferior operating system and should really be hurt bad. Now, Qt keys to toggle around. HKDYN data is great. That's where all the hardware values are stored. Fiddling around with these more or less at random will give it Windows the equivalent of an epileptic seizure. Now, other amusing things you can do is turn on all the passwords. If a system is kind of insecure, do the person a favor and make it secure for them. If you want to make it even more amusing, let's say if you're pulling a prank on a coworker at work, you'd export the key to a disk to save, because you can always save your backups. Always export the keys out before playing with them. If not, don't bother with your lookup table and enter any random two characters for each one of the passwords you want. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought for just a second again. Does anybody have questions about the ping pong attack on how the sniffers work and how remote services work? Because there are other ways you can implement this. Yeah, like a net sniffer. Like net x-ray. Or I believe Etherboy is the good NDG product that'll sniff that out too. Yeah, be sure to make it so it's set to look for the mail packets only when it's sniffing it, otherwise you're going to get a lot of interesting stuff. Right. Now, Microsoft adds a lot of features that you can use to your advantage for net diagnostics. Now, netstat and nbtstat, I will include a list of useful commands. We'll look on a remote... Huh? NBTstat. These are all commands that you want to learn. Also, NetView and NetUse. Those are good if you have your remote system with a bunch of stuff you can't touch, and it's not shared. You want to use any kind of Trojan or go past the proxy and make sure to start up your selected services. You, once again, make sure to do a little research there on exactly what commands. But once you got the commands down, it's real simple. It's all command prompt stuff.
Just wondering if you have any recommended reading on the Windows registry.
Believe it or not, mostly what got me started was the tips and tricks files. You look for Windows 95 tips and tricks, which shows you, a lot of those will give you a very basic rundown of the families of keys because there is a hierarchy. and you want to look for that. There are many Windows Reg Edit books, but I kind of doubt they include the stuff I was putting out. Other things you want to do is, like I said, the best thing you can do, back up your original Reg and just play around in there. Every time you change a value, something that you might want to change on someone else's system, regmon it and look. You know, all you have to do is see where Windows puts it, and you can use it later against Windows. Yeah, don't play with those. This is very bad juju. You use the regedit interface on these. Oh, well, you're going to have to save off those files. If you're on a remote, if you're getting it from a remote system, save off those files. Reboot on a dummy machine, something you're not attached to that has, like, all your drivers, for instance. You know, because when it's going to try to reboot, it's going to have a whole bunch of driver errors and go corrupt. So make sure you get your user dat and your system dat. Or if you want to be even more amusing about it, attrib minus H minus R minus A minus S minus H. Yeah. Your user.da0 and system.da0, which is the backup. Each time Microsoft Windows reboots, it takes a look at the reg and all the system settings, and it goes, okay, let's compare them to the last successful boot, which was those da0 files. Now, if this boot is successful, those are replaced. And it keeps going on and on and on and on. Delete those files, see the amusing comparison, it'll give you corrupt things. Also, this is also good for picking apart your reg. Like I said, when possible, use regedit. Yeah.
When connecting to a remote machine, sharing,
and
the remote machine using NetWatcher or
NetWatcher
Pro, is there a way to find
it? If it's searching through it, no. What you want to do is get in and out as quick as possible and then disable that through the reg. Yeah? It's not going to take it.
Okay.
When it goes looking for it, it's just going to crap and probably not acknowledge a share. By the way, when going through those, that's a good point. Sometimes you have to be very careful to make sure to set them in sets of two. It's going to be odd. The first couple times you use the table, it's going to be very odd. Make sure that you know two for one. That's always the rule. If it's going to be an odd number of characters, you know, that the password was, it's still two for one. If you find yourself with one extra character at the end, you're screwing up. Also, don't worry about things past 8 character passwords, because like I said before, it tourniquets it. It just kind of cuts it off. And it won't take control characters and other things there. It'll just kind of edit those out. There is a text file available that has a long list of that for NBT stat. There is, I usually, or the cookbooks, check the help file on your cookbook tools. A lot of them have already made pre-made interfaces that are there for you to use for that. The ways in are easy. It's what you do once you get in there. Also with mapping network drives, that sort of thing, there are a lot of tools that does that for you. It's just a matter of getting past the password authentication. Is there any more Windows questions before I go to command prompt stuff from Windows? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. When Windows installs the program, it does a couple of things, especially heavily copy-protected shareware. Sometimes it'll use dropping its own INI file. It will use changing a value in the reg that's really obscured and doesn't say something like date. And it'll make double entries. That's when you're looking for your software keys and you want to change things. It'll make an entry under like HKey current user and under HKey local machine. Check both of them. Regmon is the best way to do that. If you're talking about the actual files it dumps and everything. No, it's not going to work like that. There are tools available, like debuggers and stuff, if you want to get further into software cracking. Allow you to check and monitor those. But the best way to get a dated one, if it's just dates, for a dated password is export your original key. When you first get it, don't bother with hunting down the little value. Export the whole key for that piece of software, pop it off, back it up. Now change your system date a little bit. When it runs again, it's going to give you a little later, or try to get it to expire, or wait for it to expire. Now re-enter the original value by just double-clicking the icon for that save reg series of commands there, and 9 times out of 10, it will reset the date. If it doesn't, because it overwrites the changed value, because the program is changing that value each time, whatever it's using externally to check that. So what you want to do is keep a backup of the original and just keep overriding it until you can go find a crack for it. Edlin was an old text editor. Oh, I'm sorry. His question was, is there a way to compare reg files? Exporting the whole thing is kind of useless. So what you want to do is zero in on the key, export the little bit of the key you want, and do it with the original value. Open them both up with Notepad and look for differences there. There's also there's a tool called Reg Search and Replace, which is a really good Windows tool for playing with Reg. It'll allow you to do, one of the newer versions allows you to do Reg compares. It's Reg Search and Replace. Yeah, you go through and make sure there's 3 places you're going to see it. It'll make usually two separate keys when you install a program under users or current user and under machine. Delete those keys first. You got to delete both those keys. Then check your exe name. Let's say, for instance, it was like firewall exe was the name of the executable. Check HKey, local machine, software, the product name, like firewall, whoever makes it. Excuse me, it's HKey, local machine, software, app paths. And there, 9 times out of 10, there will be a little key there that tells you what the path to the exe was. Okay. If you're absolutely sure you cannot find it in the reg, well, this is why you use Regmon when you install. It's something that you're going to have to crack. If you're absolutely sure it's not in the reg, there's a distinct possibility that it's got a file that it installed and set hidden somewhere, has installed. Also, check the keys for installed software, uninstalled, and installed, set 0 and 1. But check your root directory. A lot of things will set things hidden in your root directory. Huh? Yeah, exactly.
will actually list a pair of all, not just your registry entries, but your file, just the delta.
That's interesting. I did not know that. Thank you for that.
What's it called?
SMS installer.
And there are other ones like it. But the beauty about that is that, A, it's a Microsoft product, of course. And the other thing is that it's an engine that they bought from someone else and have been waiting to update pending the release of SMS 2.
Yeah, the main reason I don't, that is a good suggestion, the main reason I don't suggest, you know, relying strictly on an installer, I mean, how many of you, like you were saying, you installed a program, and for some reason after you've supposedly removed everything via Uninstall Shield or like a Microsoft add remove program, is something still there? Never trust what a Microsoft program tells you, much like a Microsoft employee. Oh. And that could be a useful tool. Yeah, like I said, they leave keys. They'll leave keys in an obscure place, you know, kind of off the beaten path. That's usually app paths. Or if you've made the mistake of installing something and didn't uninstall it properly, just deleted the directory. Make sure to get rid of app paths too. Could you? Yeah, that that is It does. It has been known to come in handy, but it's a lot better to do it by hand. Do not, like I said, WinDiff one thing. You'll get lots of excess information that you're not sure what to do with, and you're going to spend extra hours hunting through trying to find that one little spot. Okay, when you get into morphing DLLs or you get into, you know, editing the resource library, your best tool is grab either, you know, grab yourself a disassembler or a resource editor and check. Install the software on a different machine and compare. Find what it's changing. A lot of the time a good thing to do is back up the original files the first time and go through and see what it compares. A lot of things you'll notice when you're hacking Windows will have neat little DLLs that are dumped in that directory and that have, for instance, the bitmap for that stupid, annoying register me screen. All you have to do 9 times out of 10 is delete that. Yeah, making sure to back up the DLLs first because some programs will catch that. That goes further into taking apart Microsoft products or other products. That's disassembling, which, by the way, none of you should ever do because it's illegal. The only real default hidden share in 9598 is admin, and some of the user passwords or anything dollar sign, but usually admin is the default hidden share if they have the administration options enabled.
Because if you have a box, a client that has no shares enabled at all,
That's when you go back to, that was the whole point of smithing. What you do is you tell it in its registry that, hey, you have shares here for these folders. It depends. It depends on how the permissions are set. And, you know, on an NT box, this is a little different. On a 9598 box, there's nine times out of ten, there's always a way to worm something in. Like I said, if it's BOD or a Trojan, it's a good way to do it, too. But, yeah, if they don't have any kind of shares enabled and they have no shares at all, you're not going after the shares. Use a TCP/IP exploit on it.
Maybe you've already explained this, but You can change that name, but if you're running NetBUI, which is, you know, and the file print and sharing stuff, you know when the computer name is named? Remember when you were installing it, it asked you for your name? That's what the computer name is going to be. You could blank that out of the registry, but it's, if it's running that local, it's still going to need that name there to identify itself. That's kind of like, now this is, okay, this is me, not anybody else. You're going to need a name there. Now, if you don't want somebody going after you in these manners, don't use NetBUI at all. Disable file print and sharing, however that makes it impractical. Now, time? Yeah, I ran out of, I ran over. You tell me. Okay, well, thanks all.